extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies, Kaylin Carr. Campeones, campeones, ole, ole, ole. I mean, come on, guys. 2-1 summer? How you like that? Nobody
running
believes.
Out of fingers.
Greg Berhalter. Delivering to the promised land. These young bucks delivering us to the promised land. Let's break it down. We're just doing this game tonight. Tomorrow, we'll get the MLS takes out there. We have plenty of them. Tonight, it's all about the Gold Cup. It's all about U.S.-Mexico, and it's all about this U.S. men's national team that, for the second time in a Gold Cup final, just the second, beat Mexico. Beat El Tri. Seven Nations League starters on the field tonight for Mexico. One for the U.S. One. This was not our first team. It doesn't matter. We just go get it. Charlie, give me your one word, man. What defines this performance, this result, this moment, and how do you feel?
Woo!
Lost for words. Charlie Davies is lost for words. He doesn't know what to say.
Well, there's a number of words that come to mind. I'm trying to think of the best one that fits this team, and I think it's resilience. Because they've grown throughout the tournament. I think the goal was always to get to the final. I don't think anyone ever doubted that. But to beat this A squad of the Mexican national team, that's a tall task. Let's be honest. But they came in and they gave a 100% commitment. And I give a ton of credit to Greg Berhalter, because he empowered this team, and through his tactics of the high press you saw throughout the first half, push up, get, and then they started to create chances off of that press. It was a masterful performance from the coach, but as well as the players, to go out there and get the job done. So, woo, I'm hyped. Bring on September. Let's go.
Let's just roll into it. What are we going to do, play club soccer? What a waste of time. No one needs it.
That was like three World Cup qualifiers, though. Stacked back to back to back.
Yeah.
A team that is not going to, as a group, you wouldn't think, have to get that done. Resiliency is Charlie's word for this. What's your word, Dave?
I think it's in the similar vein. I was trying to think of a better one to use than the one I came
you
with.
You would.
But it's culture. Like, watching this game, I texted someone, I said, it felt like watching Landon and Bob and Bruce's team, where there'd be games that we'd play Mexico. It didn't feel like we had the better players. And every player for the U.S. had a belief they weren't going to lose. And we didn't have that for a while. And you even look at the game under Klinsmann that we went down to the Azteca and won. Again, wasn't our best team. But there was this level of innate belief and understanding from U.S. players that this wasn't a rivalry we were going to lose in, that we belonged on that field. And I think you saw that over the last month and a half, from Nations League to this. And this was probably a better performance head-to-head against Mexico than the Nations League final one was, with that quality of players that we had. And I didn't expect it to look this way. I didn't think we didn't have a chance, but I didn't think we'd look like the better team. We should have won this game in regulation. We could have won it again in the beginning of extra time. And then we did win it and deserve to win it. So it feels like it's all back. It feels like an understanding of who U.S. soccer is and who the men's national team can be is back to the team that I grew up watching, which had success, wasn't the best team in the world, but never stepped on the field and didn't look like and looked like they didn't belong, or looked like they believed they didn't belong.
I mean, the hope is that it's the grit and it's the quality, right? And you're going to start combining that as you get these full rosters together. But Greg Berhalter is going to have some tough choices. He's also going to have some privilege here to choose guys and believe and trust guys that he might not have had full trust in before, Kaylin. What's your word? What stands out?
Well, I'll go from a personal standpoint, just proud. Like, I think that's the feeling that's shared by all of us. And, you know, when you're talking about culture and spirit and those things, from remembering watching the teams of the past, or, you know, Charlie's generation playing with the national team, you always felt so proud of the way this team, of the fight that the team was going to bring, and that culture that Dave brought up. So I think from that perspective, for me personally, I'd say proud. If I can use a second one for the team, I would just say ready. And my biggest concern for heading into the summer was, well, what about that lost gap year where we, you know, were searching for a manager and we didn't really have the pieces of the puzzle together? And is there enough time before World Cup qualifiers? Because I knew once that comes, there's no time to kind of be figuring things out and trying to, you know, who can I trust? Who can I not trust? And is there enough time? And I was thinking with the first group, like, is there enough time with the first group to get together? And we saw through Nations League, the way that they stormed through that, learned and grew together even throughout a final. And then you're like, okay, well, the Gold Cup, we're kind of playing a little bit with, I don't know, you know, it's like Mexico's bringing their A team, we're bringing our whatever team. And then you go through and you win this. And now you're starting to ask questions of Miles Robinson. He's a starter. Is it Turner? Is he a starter? Costa, he's got to be. Where does he fit? He's got to be on the field. Like, there are so many good problems to have now. And I think overall, when you look at the group and the culture, regardless of whatever team you put out there now, you start to look through and you say, U.S. men's national team, as you head towards World Cup qualifiers, this group is ready.
Yeah, I think faith is my word. And it goes back to everything you guys said. Faith that they're ready. Faith in each other. Faith when they look to the side and behind and front and back that guy was going to be, you know, fully engaged. And there were a lot of moments of that tested our faith. You know, Paul Ariola hitting the post. Paul Ariola having some other chances. Paul Ariola getting himself in good spots. Finishing across the board in this game. But it just never felt to me, and it had felt that way. And I feel like, you know, Kuva was sort of the beginning point of this, of sort of a lack of faith for U.S. soccer, for the supporters, for the players, for the program. There was just sort of there was a dead zone. There was a big mystery. Like, what was this going to be? Was Greg Berhalter even the right guy for the job? And now that's not even a question. And that's why I go back to faith, because this is where we wanted to be before World Cup qualifying, right? We wanted to be champions, and we wanted to be champions at least once. And we hoped, in like the back of our minds, and sort of chuckled about it, that maybe we would be champions of this too, even though from the very start of this whole process, we've been saying, oh, this isn't really the goal. And yeah, that's true, but that's also deflection, right? That's also being like, we kind of think in the end, it's not going to be us. And now that it is, I look at where this team, this program, this group of players, this coaching staff is. How could you look anywhere at each other and have anything but faith and belief that when you go to San Pedro Sula, or you go to, you know, San Salvador, or wherever it is, or you go to, you know, Ohio, however many times we're going to go to Ohio, whatever it is, that they can handle the situation. And that's like all we wanted, right? Because we had proved that we couldn't. And we didn't shown that our young players could. And well, and now this is these are our young players. These are guys that we didn't even think, like, who thought Gianluca Busio was going to be playing a key role in a final against Mexico's first team and winning that match 3 months ago?
Well, in the same faith vein, you see, oh, these guys are young. Every time you see a U.S. Men's National Team game, you always see the stat brought up. These guys are young. The average age is the youngest of all time. Like, already putting out that excuse, you know, that if this doesn't go well, this was a learning experience. You know, they're young. Give them time. That excuse is out the window. And on top of that, they're getting it done at that age. So when you throw in faith, it's not only faith in this World Cup qualifying process, it's faith in the long term, that we have a young group that's ready to go, not only into World Cup qualifying ready and going to qualify for the 2022 World Cup, but also for 2026 and beyond, because we're producing players. Major League Soccer is producing players. Young players are going over to Europe and getting playing time and developing. So there's a good mix within this group, and they're all led by Greg Berhalter, who I think a lot of people said, not enough. We need a bigger name.
Need Tata. We have to have Tata.
Bigger than Tata.
Did they even talk to Tata? Did they call him?
Even bigger than that. and look what he's done. Built a culture, because you have a national team coach that went through the process, and he understands what a team means, an American team, the chemistry, playing in that 2002 World Cup, being a part of that squad when they went so far. You bring that now back full circle as a coach, redeveloping that same feeling. And it's showing. It is clearly showing.
And listen, we're probably going to talk a lot about Greg Berhalter. I did my stock up, stock down out of this camp, and I put him top of stock up, but he didn't even need it. The Nations League win was enough. That was his goal this summer, was to win a trophy and to show that he could be a winner and show that his team could win. He'd already done that. But some of the little points with this group, we've talked a lot about Kellen Acosta working his way back in and Greg Berhalter being able to keep him connected, keep him motivated. Look at Eric Williamson. He literally lost his spot in this camp, and he was still able to keep him motivated and connected to the group. He comes on and wins the game in the semifinals off the bench in one role, and then he gets pulled into a final and plays his best ever game, obviously at an international level because it's like his second one, in a huge moment where he's connected, he's winning tackles, he's doing the things he does well, turning up field when he gets opportunities. But it just shows you, George Bello getting his second appearance and the confidence that the coaching staff has, you know, flowing over to him on the field. Matthew Hoppe, a guy who was off the radar 6 months ago and gives you 118 minutes and maybe was the best player on the field. All of that comes down to what we're talking about, which is the faith, the culture, what they've built. And most dangerous player on the field for some stretches for the U.S. Charlie, a striker who puts his head down and shoots no matter what? That seems like he's your guy.
Oh, come on. Charlie could get his head up. You know, later in the career, Charlie became a little bit of a man.
I was scoring and creating. I had
my
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my God. Sounds like
Thomas is going to have to roll that reel.
It's Stu Holden's birthday. Stu's like, I need to be on this field. I should be on this field. Why am I not there? Let's try to dig into the game because we're going to go through, I think, this tournament, as you said, stock up, stock down, Dave, and try to sort of determine and plot out where guys like Matt Turner or Miles Robinson or James Sands or Williamson or Roldan now fit in.
Kellen Acosta.
Yeah, because the game is, well, Kellen Acosta, he's fit. Like, he's in. Like, there's no unfitting him in. He proved it here. Maybe that's where we should start as we talk about the nitty-gritty of this game. Kellen Acosta is that man. Like, that's multiple games in this tournament where he was just like, everything was him. He was in the middle of everything. He was winning the tackles he had to win. He was finding the right balls when he did pick it up. He was the game for the U.S., Kalen, in a lot of ways. And he was the leader. And that's what he was supposed to be. This is what, if you wanted this spot, Kalen, I'm getting confused here. If you want to be a six in qualifying, Kalen, you want to be in the starting lineup.
You want to play that role.
Let's go.
Boom. You ready to go? I hope you're fit.
Men's league. No, I know where I belong. No, he was fantastic. And look, when I think when it stands out, I mean, you didn't even mention the set piece delivery on the game winner, right? And it's just because he does so many things for this team. And the biggest thing I would say about him is just he's a winner. Like, you could just see in the Nations League final, he starts the game at the six, moves out, ends up playing left back, I think, at the end of that game, and had an incredible performance in that. Again, as the tournament build, he just got bigger and bigger as it went on. And just every time I feel like the moment arrives or it's a big match, he's up for it. Like, he's in somebody's ear. He's in somebody's face. He's making the right plays. He's making the right passes. And he had an extra gear. He looked like he was, you know, I mean, the way we talk about Tyler Adams out there, he covered just as much ground. I would love to see, like, how much distance he covered in this match because he was everywhere. Plays with both feet, can get out of trouble. And so when you think about going into CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers, he's got to be in the team. I don't care where on the field. It's now to the point where you just have to find a place for him. And you know, probably be the number six position, but if it needs to be somewhere else, you find a spot for him on the field because I think he's that important, and that versatile, can do that much for this team. So yeah, I mean, Kellen Acosta, man of the match tonight, but you could say that probably through a number of them. And just, you know, people I think had said, oh, did he miss his window to go to Europe? Did he, you know, he didn't get that transfer. There was that time where it was, okay, MLS maybe wasn't selling players at the same rate that it is now. And maybe he was going to be a cautionary tale about sticking around in MLS too long. And he got sent home from the national team and then he comes back. And I think it's this thing that we do so often with even maybe younger players in this tournament or guys that we feel like maybe aren't ready necessarily for World Cup qualifiers yet. And it's like, it's a long career, right? And he's still just, I think, just turned 26 during this tournament. If you're a European suitor watching this tonight, you're probably going to have a pretty good idea about how he sizes up versus Alvarez or whoever it might be from the Mexican side that's playing their trade in Europe. And I just give him so much credit for showing his personality. And I think he's going to play a big role, not just in World Cup qualifiers, but I think also a player that will play a big role at the World Cup, provided we qualify, which, you know, still needs to be done. I don't want to count chickens because we won, you know, two tournaments this summer. It's the big one ahead, but he will definitely play a big part in helping us get there.
Counterpoint. Kellen Acosta stays in Colorado, plays in midfield with Mark Anthony Kaye, Cole Bassett. David Goss dies of a heart attack because of the pure level of energy and happiness that's happening. And that's how this story ends.
Well, and that's kind of the beauty here, is that he may get that opportunity here to go to Europe, but in Colorado, he's completely revived his national team career to where he is going to play. We got to get there, but in the biggest matches possible for his country. And that didn't look like it was going to happen probably 2 years ago. It might not look like this could have happened. And there was still a point for the last couple of months, probably, where we're all sort of like, still prove it, you know? Can he play the six by himself? If Tyler's out, is it really Kellen? Well, I think that question has been answered. What other questions have been answered or are open now? What about Greg and his adjustments in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I think that's... Again, I said he didn't need his stock up.
Let me just lay him out real quick.
For him,
Bello
to come...
for Vines... Cannon for Moore, Williamson for Busio, Zardes for DK.
So for him to come in, I think the Zardes for DK one is one that everyone would have made and made sense. And I actually thought he did the right thing in not bringing DK on, which obviously hindsight's 20/20, it looks that way. But DK hasn't proven that he can affect the game or be an outlet at this level right now. And so with your team potentially having to sit deep, it made sense to keep Zardes on. Zardes continued to be an outlet when they needed to, came back and defended when he had to. Williamson coming into midfield, bringing a little bit more physicality than Busio has, maybe a little bit more confidence, a little bit more knowledge about the game, obviously, in his years playing. And so you saw the quality there. But the fullbacks, it was a masterstroke to say, I'm going to bring fresh legs in because I need that energy, that athleticism, sometimes to press high, but also defensively to try and keep this Mexico attack in front of us. And then I'm going to bring on my two guys who have played this whole time, probably predetermined around that 60th minute to change the pace of the game. And that's what turned it around, because Mexico came out of the halftime locker room on the front foot. And that was really the only 10 or so minutes where the U.S. looked lost. And it looked like, okay, that's the end of the game. And then Greg Berhalter has those two subs to bring on. He said it to John Strong. You talked about in the pregame, Weeby, of unfortunately, Christian Roldan's a super sub for him. It's great because it means he has a guaranteed role with the national team. It sucks because it means he probably won't start that much. He comes on as well. And those three subs changed the game for the U.S. and allowed them to, what they should have, win in regular time and then get to extra time and eventually get that winner. So one of the things that Greg Berhalter has taken a little bit of heat for is his changes and maybe unwillingness to make changes, not timing it the right way, not affecting the game. He did it twice. Tonight, he did it from the start, and then he already had a plan that worked to perfection later on in the game.
Charlie, when you think about the way this game was played and won for the U.S., and I'm asking you this because you've done this, you've felt it, you've been a part of teams like this. What does this performance and the way they went about it say to you about this team and about what Greg was trying to accomplish in this game with this group?
Well, it catapults the team into a whole nother stratosphere of what is possible, how good this group is. And I think they all are cognizant of the inexperience, that they're just getting started. They know, yes, two trophies have been won this summer, but they're nowhere near the finished product. And that it's all about the process, taking it week by week in World Cup qualifying, because Greg Berhalter is going to let them know, it's great what we accomplished this summer, but we start back at ground zero come September in El Salvador, where you're going to be really tested. It's an improved El Salvador side, one that I think grew within this Gold Cup, gives them an idea of what it takes to qualify for a World Cup. They're going to have to come in with that mentality of, we're going to do whatever it takes to win. It might not be pretty, and it most likely won't be, but we know exactly how to get results, especially in CONCACAF, and we need to go there and try and win. That's what I think the mentality of this group is. We're going to win. We're going out to win every game, and we think we can win when we're at our best. So I think from that perspective on the players, everyone feels, okay, we're in a good spot. I'm vibing with my guys. This is like a family, and that's the culture piece that we've talked about. And then from Greg Berhalter's point, I think he came in with a clear identity, with a clear mission. I'm going to get the most out of my guys. I'm going to put them in a position to succeed. I'm going to see them grow. I'm going to talk to them about the ups and downs throughout training and the Gold Cup. He got them together. They all believe in the coach now. So when a coach goes out and tells you, hey, we're playing this formation or we're switching this, there's no question. You say, yes, coach. You know what he's doing. Whereas I've played with coaches who make those changes and everyone is looking at each other like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. This guy has no idea what he's doing. He's killing us. That's not the case, because the proof is the trophy. When you have the trophy behind you, now I listen to me. I know what I'm doing. And that's what I love to see.
And what do you, in this game, I'm just curious, as you think we'll get the game plan and the way they approached it, does anything translate into World Cup qualifying, and what does?
Yes, I do. And I think it's because of Kellen Acosta's performance in particular that you can say, all right, we went with the 3-4-3 against Mexico in the Nations League final to start the game. I know that because Kellen Acosta can cover so much ground, and if Tyler Adams is healthy, I can play with Tyler as a six and Kellen and Weston McKennie slightly in front of him. And then all three, because they have the ability to cover so much ground. And it reminds me of the 4-4-2 we played with Bob Bradley in 2009, 2010. When you have two players who can go up and down and cover so much ground, it allows everyone else to kind of be free. And especially with Tyler Adams, McKennie, and Acosta, now Christian Pulisic has a license to roam. We know Gio Reyna, how he likes to go as plays an inverted winger and come inside. They can put fires out because they can anticipate and they can get to the ball before anyone else. So now I think he's getting real giddy, because that makes the team that much more flexible. You have a lot of flexibility. Plus, if you ever do play with just two, you know that Kellen Acosta or Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie can all interchange depending on who needs rest.
Yeah, and it allows us to press as well, too, which there was a much higher line of confrontation in this match to begin with that caused some problems early on for Mexico. They got the big chance there for Areola, who wasn't able to put it away. But we were able to pick off a couple plays like that throughout the match and pick our moments to do it. And I thought it's just a good stance for the U.S. men's national team in general. It suits our player pool. It suits, I think, the personality of the team. And it helps Mexico from sort of getting into the olays, and really they were the ones that had to adapt. And it was Tata that was saying, okay, at a certain point, I think in the second half, and even at points in the first half, they decided to go a little bit more direct. And they found some success doing that, because you put three or four guys high, and Funes Mori was looking to knock down balls and causing problems. And, you know, they were trying to maybe isolate Sands on the long ball as opposed to Robinson, who looked to shift and try and get those ones. But I thought the tactics right were spot on for Berhalter, and even as far as moving the outside backs, which we already hit. But that I think that's something that you, when you look towards World Cup qualifiers, you could say, all right, I think that's something that we could take forward and could suit the style of play and the personnel. And I can't, you know, we look at Kellen Acosta as the six, right, and how much he changes the way you can play. And we've talked about Tyler Adams doing that. Miles Robinson changes the picture entirely too, because at times when we struggled in Nations League, it was when John Anthony Brooks and Mark McKenzie got dragged far wide and had to cover ground for the outside backs, whether that was Dest or whoever it was. Miles Robinson, you saw in those plays, can cover that ground himself. He's like he can erase any problem and make it almost look easy when it gets wide. It's just he has that ability and athleticism to get that to cover that much ground. So when you have a six and a number three or four, four or five that can play that position and cover ground and put out a fire, it allows you to really, really press forward and know that you have a safety valve in the back.
I agree with you guys. I also think what adds to this is these three games. We now know Miles Robinson can be John Anthony Brooks in the games that Brooks doesn't play, that Kellen can play when Tyler can't. which I don't think we knew a month ago. Like, if Tyler's out, I think you had to change the way your team played. You had to find cover. And unfortunately, Tyler's probably going to be out a bunch. It's just been the reality so far. But you know that everyone's not going to be able to play all three games in World Cup qualifying when that's the case. Brooks as well probably won't be able to come from Europe and play three times. Miles Robinson 100% can play with him. Now we know he can also play without him as that left center back if necessary. And you could partner him with a Mark McKenzie or whoever else, Walker Zimmerman, if he's healthy, whatever that is. So you've not just created options with your best team, but you've added depth and confidence in that depth. And I mean, you look at this, Stu said it on the broadcast, but he was part of a B-C team that went to a Gold Cup final and they lost to Mexico 5-0. We beat Mexico. Now, I'm not saying today that this is the deepest the pool's ever been, but it shows a level of depth in the pool to be able to compete across the summer in these different ways. And that wasn't something we were sure of because a lot of these guys were unproven. Sam Vines, I think, showed he could play at this level. Shaq Moore's been good. So now you've added two or three options to the fullback position. So that's been a huge part, I think, for Greg Berhalter of what he's found out this summer.
All right, let's just get into it because we look ahead here and it's a good way to evaluate what these guys did in this tournament. And the tournament's over and we won it. Champions. U.S. men's national team. Seventh of all time. Gold Cup, in case you forgot.
It's nice to have win a trophy in Vegas. Like that. That is a good if you're going to win it all, that's a nice place to host a final.
So. And, you know, Charlie's taught us in the past that when you go play a final, you play a final in Vegas, you need to have that bottle service set up before. It's not
I
a
think
jinx.
They had it right behind
it's
the
just,
goal.
It's just proper preparation. You're not jinxing anything. You just got to be ready. You just got to make sure. You don't want to be looking at each other in that locker room like, dang, what are we about to do? Like, we just won this. Like, no,
It's known.
Do we go to 7-Eleven? Like, get a 12-pack? Like, how do we go to the, like, ballroom at the hotel? Nope. No, that's not the way this works.
No.
Let's just get into it. Matt Turner. We'll start in the back. Matt Turner, and here's the stats on him with the national team. He has 7 games started. He's got 6 clean sheets, 7 wins, and a goals against average of 0.14. 5 of the wins have been 1-0. He makes spectacular saves repeatedly in this tournament. Game-saving saves in this tournament. Where does he stand now? If you look ahead, first, I guess you could evaluate his performance, but I think, you know, give him the golden gloves and basically, like, call it good. Like, I think we know how well he played. So what now for Matt Turner? Is this, and we said on the last show, Charlie, and is it time to double down? Do you think this is it? Is he the starter come September?
Man, oh man. One thing that I really dislike is that we kind of just skip over Ethan Horvath. I mean, he came in as a substitute for Zach Steffen in that Nations League final, saved a pen, had another big save, and then had the clean sheet against Costa Rica in the following game. We don't give him any credit. He's also in the mix as a starter because he's proven, and he made a move because he needed to make the move to play. So if he's starting every week at Nottingham Forest and putting in performances, then his name should certainly be in the equation. I don't envy Greg Berhalter that you have 3 phenomenal keepers to come in and all 3 are capable of winning you games in CONCACAF. But you always go with the hot hand. In every instance, the player who's playing consistently and the player who's playing the best. That's always how the national team has been for the most part. It's we want guys who are obviously considered the best, but are playing every week in and week out and doing well. And Matt Turner's doing that. So I think in that instance, after tonight's performance against the Mexican A team, he vaults himself to number one.
Sorry, I just, because we're going to have to put this in a graphic, so I just want to make sure the language is correct. So what Charlie Davies is saying is the guy who plays for Pep Guardiola at Manchester City in the United Kingdom, otherwise known as England, Premier League, is not the starter over the guy who plays for the New England Revolution, Matt Turner.
That is correct. Unless we see something unforeseen with Manchester City and Ederson goes down injured or something and Zach Steffen is a starter and he's playing. Barring that situation, Matt Turner should be starting come World Cup qualifiers because he's going to be in form.
Should we do a victory lap for Doyle or should we let him do that when he gets back from vacation?
Ah, just Yeah. He's in Mexico probably like talking the ear off of some poor bartender being like, yeah. I told everybody like, you know, 2 years ago, like 3.5 years ago, I was like, Matt Turner, have you seen his underlying numbers? His goals minus expected goals. It's at the top of the league. Like nobody wants to talk about this, but I'm here to tell you that he could be the starter for the national team. And that bartender is probably like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Shut up, man. Here's some more Cuban rum for you. If you are, we talked about this with Zach Steffen and he said, look, I'm going to have to make a decision. Does this put any urgency behind that decision, knowing that there is a World Cup and World Cup qualifying? We're getting ahead of ourselves. I'm sorry. That there are World Cup qualifiers to be played for. Yes. There's a spot to be earned, and there is a place in your country's sporting history essentially at stake.
Yes. And the only reason it's urgent now as opposed to before is because of the emergence of Matt Turner. If Matt Turner was not playing out of his skin, and now probably every European club, because he already has a European passport, a Lithuanian passport.
Vamos Lithuania,
which,
right now.
Which makes him that much more attractive to every team in Europe who are looking for a phenomenal goalkeeper who's just 27 years old, which is young for a keeper. Now, I think the impetus is on Zach Steffen to say, hey, agent, find me a club right now where I'm going to be playing week in, week out. I can't go a whole season again not getting consistent matches. That's what has to happen.
I think you're right, Charlie. I think one of the things that makes this whole thing awkward is that the World Cup, if we were to qualify, is in November and not, you know, at the end of the year when it should be. Because I think Greg Berhalter, he's got to manage this right. Like Zach Steffen has the ability to be a world-class goalkeeper, hence why he's at Manchester City. He's played under Greg Berhalter at the club level. They have a relationship.
He's captained this team this year, I want to say.
And it can't be Matt Turner had a good Gold Cup, and now you've lost your spot.
It's not a Gold Cup. It's a whole season. It's past two MLS seasons, to be honest. And you can't go another full season of not playing, maybe just playing FA Cup or the League Cup, right? And then go into another season where you're only playing 6 months of a season. That means you're giving Matt Turner another full year of playing. I mean, you're really.
I wouldn't be shocked if it's a loan in January, if he stays for the rest of this season. Obviously, it's really late. And it feels like he and Greg Berhalter understand that there is a level of playing for Pep, being in training with Man City, learning his fundamentals, that there is value there for Zach Steffen. As Charlie said, you start to reach a point where now that's great for a year, a year and a half. Now you got to be playing in games too. So that's what he has to find. It is a tough decision. I feel bad for Greg Berhalter for having to make that at some point.
But
I think for Zach, you only leave Man City though if you go to the right club. You don't make like a haste decision. Yeah. You don't make a haste decision and say,
you also go talk to Greg. And I'd be so curious to hear what those conversations are like.
Whoa. What if Matt Turner sold in January to Europe, New England Revolution looking for a goalkeeper? On loan, Zach Steffen.
No chance.
Maybe he goes to Colorado Rapids to play behind that Mark Anthony Kay, Kellen Acosta.
Whoa, you've been drinking some Cuban rum.
He's never coming back to MLS.
I'll take the other side. I'll take the other side of this with Zach Steffen. And the other side for this is the way that Berhalter wants to play. And when you look at the way that we've won these last two tournaments, I don't think that's the way necessarily he sees the full picture of this team and exactly the fruition of all of his tactical system and the way he wants to build and go through these possessions of patterns of play. That's not the full realization of it. And Zach Steffen does give you something, which is why he's at Man City, does give you something with an ability to play with the ball that I don't think that any of the other two goalkeepers do. And so when you look at that, as well as the way he comes off his line at times and can kind of like play this sort of modern goalkeeper that comes off and is able to sort of sweep things up, he provides you something different in that standpoint. Now, the other problem for Zach, I think, is just some injuries. He's had some injury issues as of late as well, which is why it's great for U.S. soccer to have a wealth of options behind him. But if you're going to look at the maybe not just right now, because there's nothing to pick apart right now from the performance from Turner, and say, you know, I mean, he had one touch maybe that went a little bit long and, you know, a little off on that. But Zach Steffen has also made mistakes as well coming out of the back. So, but I think when you look at the full picture of what this U.S. men's national team could look like, I do think the ceiling is higher with Zach Steffen in goal.
To your point, after that touch, I don't think Turner went short a single time.
Yeah.
Now, the game didn't really allow for it. It wasn't like the U.S. was building out that much. But after that gaffe, and I don't know if that was from Berhalter.
And for the record, I'm good with that. Like, I sometimes it drives me nuts when we have this like fascination with playing all the way out of the back at all times. I'm like, I'm good with not taking risks or as many risks. But I'm saying, based on what I know of what the system wants to, what Greg seems to want the system to look like, he really does value that. And I'm not sure that the other players really offer that same high end quality as far as being able to do that.
Now, the question is when that's supposed to happen, because I think one of the things we've learned so far is with the national team, it just takes too long. It's too hard probably to implement what Greg Berhalter wants to do, and it's going to take the full cycle. So the question is, this fall for World Cup qualifying, does he see a team that can play the way he wants to play fully? And if not, is Matt Turner the safer bet because he's a better shot stopper in games where you're playing like this? Because that's what this summer showed was, if they don't play Greg Berhalter soccer, they can still win. That's what's great. That gives us confidence for World Cup qualifying. What he wants to see potentially in Qatar in 2022 is different than what this looks like. How over the course of the next year does he get there? And at what point do some guys fit into the lineup that, you know, maybe won't later on, and the other way around because of where he feels the team is at?
It's all about timing, right?
That's the international game. Also, just to zoom out, this is a really good problem, right? If you have someone at Man City who feels like he may need to get a move to get games because he's getting pushed behind, I wish the same thing would happen for Dest or other players where it's like, it doesn't matter exactly what position you're at or what club you're at. You need to be playing, you need to be playing well, and not just how you're playing there, how you're playing with the national team too. So, these are good problems to have, for sure.
Dest has pressure. Pulisic's now a wingback, so
it's under pressure. Don't start with that.
We can't get into that on this show. Here's a quote from Greg Berhalter as we sort of digest this Gold Cup final win for the U.S. seventh championship. He's playing ETR bingo here. Here's the quote. Really proud, ding, 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 of their resiliency, ding, ding, ding. When you look at the game today, we did not stop. It was relentless from us. That's the mark of a good team. We had faith in each other. Ding, ding, ding. Actually, he didn't say the faith part. I made that last part up. Just kidding. But he said the rest of it. So he said the rest of it. We're on the same page there. We'll pepper in some quotes as we roll through this right here. Tata Martino's press conference is also ongoing, and he's saying what you'd expect him to say, which is that every defeat hurts, but this one particularly so. How about looking ahead to World Cup qualification and the two center backs? We talked a little bit about Miles Robinson already. James Sands as well. I think we're sort of consensus here. It's been building to this point, and given what's happened with that depth chart at center back, Miles Robinson has a very good shout to be a starter straight up, like a first choice player for Greg Berhalter. I think we all understand that. How about James Sands? What's his place now in this hierarchy?
I think he did well. I think he's improved his stock. His stock has definitely gone up, but as a starter, penciled in for the U.S. Men's National Team in a World Cup qualifier, not quite yet. But Miles Robinson, what you love about Miles Robinson is he's a right-footed center back. So when John Brooks is on the left, it's a natural fit. Mark McKenzie is a left-footed center back playing on the right, and he had a tough time against Mexico, although he rebounded against Costa Rica in the following match. If you take any stock in that match,
Isn't Mark two-footed?
Yeah, but he's left-footed. I mean, that's his preferred foot. Either way, those two, if Mark starts off well in Europe, they're really going to be competing for that starting spot alongside John Brooks, and you feel good about that. You feel really good about that because if Mark doesn't continue to progress, what we've seen from Miles Robinson, I mean, his anticipation. What impressed me the most throughout the Gold Cup with Miles Robinson is his ability to be on the ball and be confident with his passing. I think his feet got sharper. And then he did step in to the midfield a couple of times with the ball to start an attack. He was playing switch balls to the other flank. I was like, this isn't the Miles Robinson I've seen in the past year.
That's what Tata was thinking. Let's go. Like, hold on. Well, I drafted
same with
this
Bello,
dude.
Same
I
with Bello.
Who, who is this guy?
Like, yeah, him and Bello, he was like, go at them. And it's like, no, they were ready for it. No, there was that play where Robinson carries it all the way. He just continues carrying it, looked very comfortable moving up, and then continued his run in the box to try to get on the end of it. I think he's 3 goals now and 9 caps, which is tremendous, shows his threat as on set pieces. And as far as Sands go, you know, we talked about the growth from young players individually, also collectively. The best way, I think, for young players to learn, you're going to learn hard lessons, right? But you're going to, it's a better to learn in a win, in a victory with a trophy at the end. And you could see Sands learning a lot throughout the tournament. And he won as well. And he did enough and he looked more comfortable as things went on. I like him in a three back, in a three center back system. I think he could be used in that situation. And I also think that that could be a good look for the U.S. men's national team at certain points. I know that's something Greg's been interested in doing, but the question we had coming out of Nations League was, do we have enough center back good? Like, do we have 3 strong center back options that we can play in that position? And I think we sort of talked about it on the last show, but if you use McKenzie, Brooks, and Robinson, that's 3. And then Sands can also play at times in the middle of those as well, or maybe on the right. So I think that there's a lot of good options there. You're feeling way better coming out of this. But Robinson, for me, I mean, unbelievable. I remember talking to Bocanegra actually at the draft, and we were backstage, and I said, how good could this guy be? And he's like, U.S. men's national team center back. I think he'll get there at some point. He's like, I don't know right away, but you look a couple years down the road, man, he was spot on with that one.
Nice to see him get there too in this way, because there were some stop starts that national team career and also his club career as well. I think that Sands ends up in a place that we didn't know he was before, which is that if he's starting a World Cup qualifier, there's no reason to panic, right? He didn't show anything. And there was like 1 or 2 times in this game where sort of the thing that you worried about, which is Funes Mori basically just bullying him and beasting him, sort of happened, but it wasn't repeat. And there were enough physical confrontations and moments where he needs to read the pass or read the angle or read the line and get a foot in that he did it. So you don't panic. If he's there and it's against Mexico, that's probably not what you want. But against the rest of the competition, I think you're good with that. How about Matthew Hoppe? And if you can do this without making a Clint Dempsey comparison, I got $10 for you.
Yeah, they're different players.
People can't help it; they just cannot help it, man.
They're different players, but then
Don't disrespect Deuce like that.
Can I just say one thing? He cuts inside and tries to draw a foul, and it felt like watching Clint again in one of those games where he felt like he could take the pressure and earn a foul and help his team and was really good at it. He wasn't awed by this moment in any way, right? Like, from the start, Hoppe was trying to take guys on down the line, trying to relieve pressure, trying to get behind the back line. He got lost defensively a couple times. He was the wrong side. Stu pointed out pretty well on one big chance. He lost the ball and then left his side to chase it back and allowed an overload against Bello going back the other way. So he still has a lot to learn. We don't really know where he'll be playing this year. He's still on Schalke's books. It doesn't feel like that's going to last. But he moved up, in my mind, up that roster because, again, you're looking at a guy who said, oh, he's done some nice things in club. Can he do it at the national team level? Can he do it in CONCACAF? And he showed over the course of this month 100% that he can scale his game up to this level.
What's the role, though? What's the realistic role for Matthew Hoppe with the first team in World Cup qualifying? And we know there are going to be injuries, but you would hope, and I'm going to knock on wood here, that it's not catastrophic, that the entire squad isn't just, you know, laid low at the same time. Will he be used?
I think it's similar to Sands, which is their versatility is what will get them on rosters. They'll be at World Cup qualifying because you know you can use them in a couple different ways in case there are injuries, in case something happens. I don't think either of them are being brought into a camp with the idea of you're starting against this opponent because of what you do right now at this phase of their career, which is fine. They just need to get into this group and start playing. If Matthew Hoppe goes back to Europe and spends 5 months banging in goals at a true center forward position and no one else does, I'm sure he's going to get a shot at that spot. But right now, I think he's still fourth at the center forward spot, but now he's an option on the wing. So now you're willing to bring him to
a camp because you know you can use him in a couple different ways. However, you need to over the course of two or three games.
Charlie, what do you think of his development in this tournament?
I think he's improved on the depth chart. I think people didn't really know what Hoppy could do on the international stage with this U.S. men's national team. People weren't sure of his position. Is he a winger? Is he a number nine? I still think he's better served as a number nine right now. I don't think he's your traditional winger at this stage in his career. So when I'm looking at the depth chart, I see Bachu, P. Folk, Sargent, Zardes, DK, and I think DK this tournament highlighted his technical deficiencies. He's, in the championship, you don't really need technical abilities. To be honest, let's call a spade a spade. I think he has a bright, bright future, high ceiling, but technically not good enough yet for real close games where the ball, you can't lose possession. Every touch has to be tight. He doesn't have that ability just yet. So he's got to work on that. And then we're going to see a much more improved and efficient Daryl DK and ways for him to still be involved in the game if he's not scoring goals. And I think that's what we saw in this Gold Cup is he struggled when it came to keeping the ball and being impactful without getting on the score sheet. So I think go back to the drawing board. He's grown a ton, especially since, his first game with Orlando City. And I think Hoppy has an opportunity to find a club and start playing well, getting consistent reps at the striker position, and then come back into camp ready to try and have an opportunity and take it.
The reason for me why Hoppy's so exciting, I think, is because he's not afraid to try stuff, and that's where the comparisons to Deuce come in a little bit, where it's just
doesn't come off at the same rate.
Exactly,
and it's not the same kind of things that he's trying. There's swag and
it's extreme directness.
But it's just the personality to try. And at points in this tournament, I think we were really searching for somebody to kind of grab a game or try something or see if something can come off. And I think sometimes, to Charlie's point, exactly, Deuce was making the right decisions. There was never ideas where he should have squared it and he didn't, or he went for the shot when there was a pass to be made. And so I think some of the decision-making is still happening, but that happens with young players as well too. And something that you kind of have to learn and do, but I feel I'm excited to see him with the full group. I think when he's especially around good players and these top end guys that we have coming into the team, and you put him in a position, I think, where he maybe doesn't have to come back as much. The further back he got, so that's where the decision making becomes a bit more risky and where you can get on the wrong side of things. He got into trouble a few times like that, trying to play sort of a little too cute at times coming out in his own defensive half. But he wants the ball, and when he gets it, he wants to go direct to goal. And that, there's not a ton of players still in our player pool that have that kind of quality. And the other thing is he wants to win the game. Like, he wants to get the goal. He wants to score. He wants to be the hero. He wants to get the shine. And that's something I like from an attacking player. And I think it's something that, if harnessed the right way, I think he could be really good for us and score some important goals through qualifying.
Pretty sure he's also boys with Christian Pulisic, like going fishing together and training. And, sometimes relationships go a long way, both on the field and off. This is a big tournament for Matthew Hoppy. And you said it, he's got a big decision coming too. There's a lot of these players that are in that position. What's my club situation going to be? September, October, November are one thing with the U.S., but what am I going to be doing as a professional to prepare for those moments? How about this? Christian Roldan. We've talked about it a bunch on the pregame shows, and Dave and I have kind of beat this one to death. I'm curious what you guys think. I think that Greg looks at him and says, you are a perfect change the game substitute because you understand what we want to do and you understand how to unbalance teams. Like, with your movement and your passing, you see where space is and you exploit it and you allow other people to exploit it. Is Christian Roldan a player that you think is going to be on World Cup qualifying rosters? And if so, what is his role for this team?
Absolutely. I mean, He's a guy that you could drop on any pitch in any field, anywhere in CONCACAF, and you'll feel confident that he's going to be up to the task. And that, I mean, that's the thing we talk about, like consistency and young players and all that, but the mentality, and you know exactly what you're going to get from him. Now, he's also able to give you a little bit more than just, you know, winning balls and winning duels and tracking back and being honest. He comes in games and he got the game winning assist to Hoppy, right? This game, he comes in almost immediately. He serves in an early ball that almost hits Hoppy again, and Zardes was both going for it in the back post. I do want to go back just real quick to Hoppy, maybe as a second striker, because at the moments when he got close to Zardes were the moments that he got the most goal dangerous. So I would be interested in that. But as far as Roldan goes, I think he'll absolutely have to be involved in nearly, I would say, probably most all of the qualifying rosters. But I don't know. That's just be my take on him.
And that's a math problem too. I keep thinking about, we're going through all these guys and we're like, he's got to be there. He's got an opportunity, you know, he's got to be, well, Greg's going to have to make those decisions. Anything, let's wrap this thing up. We've been going for a while. We've got a show tomorrow. There's U.S. Women's National Team in the morning, or depending on your
time
zone,
in 3 hours,
in the middle of the freaking night. Let's wrap this thing up. We won a trophy, Charlie, our second of the summer. We are Gold Cup champions of 2021 for just the second time in the history of the U.S. Men's National Team. They beat Mexico in this final. 2007 was the other time. There've been World Cup qualifying wins. There've been World Cup wins. But this is just the second time head-to-head in a Gold Cup final that the U.S. has triumphed. Put a bow on it for me. What are you left thinking about from this tournament, from this group of players, from Greg Berhalter, and how do you play it forward?
What I'm left thinking about is, one, we hired the right coach. Finally, let's go. That's one. So he's pulled together a young group, a talented group, one that, you know, you have a number of players playing in Europe, playing in high-level competition, big-time leagues, but also young players who are playing consistently in Major League Soccer who will potentially make the move overseas, right? And bringing those two different groups who have different mentalities, because just the lifestyle is completely different and what you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis is completely different, but bringing them together, that's what we've seen. So reestablishing the U.S. Men's National Team culture, which is family and winning and not giving anybody respect on the field. So we've seen that with the Nations League final against Mexico, but also this completely different group, same attitude, same mentality. So what I'm looking forward to is seeing that continue to develop. El Salvador, Canada, Honduras, those three games in September, continuing the momentum. Not taking a break, not starting over, continuing to build off of this legacy, which is now you have two championship, two trophies to go in to World Cup qualifying. That's your foundation now. There's no going backwards. You're building off of these two results, and that's what I'm hyped for. So now it's continuing to challenge these players, pushing them forward, and we know Greg Berhalter and his staff always reach out to these players. Here's video. Take a look. This is what we're thinking versus El Salvador, versus Canada at home, and versus Honduras. These are the formations I'm thinking about. This is how I see you in those formations. And start to think about that. And then everyone gets hyped when they come back to camp, that you have that feeling of being around everybody. That's what I miss the most, is the camps, the brotherhood, the camaraderie, coming back from Europe to a national team camp because everyone's psyched to be around each other. I think you get that feeling again with the same group.
Can I hop in real quick?
Yeah, no.
I love all that. I agree. And also, you know, I think just as far as the psychological part of it, like, I feel like CONCACAF now, the U.S. men's national team was not a team to be feared as of late, right? And I feel like now if you look at the Mexican team and they say, okay, yeah, you beat us with Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna and Weston McKennie and yada, yada, yada. And then
it was
like,
kind of lucky and, you know, like, we, you know, yeah, that's not the real thing, right?
Exactly. And then you roll up like, you know, a month or so later and you got a whole different cast of characters. Probably half the guys on the Mexican national team didn't know who George Bello was or
James Sands.
Like, they probably didn't even know these guys, right? And then you get punched in the mouth again then next time you show up, there's going to be some respect and there's going to be some fear there as well too. And so that part is big. And then I also just think, as far as from an MLS perspective, you catch some flack and you catch some heat to say, oh, MLS players aren't quite up to the level or whatnot. But you look at a lot of the players that were out there today, and a lot of the most important players, a lot of them are academy players. A lot of them are college draft picks that had come through. Some guys weren't even playing soccer 10, 15 years ago, in Matt Turner's case. Like, we're still, and I think where the soccer is good, and it was really good at moments. And I think it's going to get better, but the mentality part too, I think from the American players was something that shined through, I think, in both of those performances, in these finals. So I feel I was worried about the timeline of how ready can you get, but they getting to a final, playing in a final, getting that, though, you can't buy those types of experiences, heading to World Cup qualifiers. So, I'm pumped up. I'm jacked.
Can I just add one thing in? And I talked at the beginning about being excited, feeling like you guys have said, like this is a U.S. team of the past, and what we've seen, it feels really comfortable again to feel like the FMF house is on fire and it be the U.S.'s role and it be a summer tournament.
So you're like, saying you like being an arsonist. You just happen to be standing there with a gas can and a pack of matches, just like, I don't know what happened to that house.
Listen,
that thing is burning.
Well, it's we were in a burning house not too long ago.
It's been a chaotic few years, and I feel like I'm home again. Is Tata here? Can he handle this role? Can he find goals without Raul Jimenez? Is he the guy for World Cup qualifying? A year ago, it would have been the opposite conversation, and we're back, baby. We are back, and it feels good to see it.
I'm going to finish this with this, which is that it's nice to feel the past, as you said, Charlie, in that fight, in that sort of just like, we're dogs and we are, that's what we like sort of mentality, but then also see in the future so much depth, so much quality, so many experiences on a professional level that your generation, the generation before that, previous generations haven't had. They have not been in Champions League finals. They have not been scoring goals for the second best team in Germany in Champions League semifinals. They have not been in positions in a wide like breadth that these players are going to be in, and that they're going to bring that experience into CONCACAF and mix what we love and what we know about those U.S. teams of old, which is like, I'm about to throw a punch straight in your face, and if you hit me back, here we go. I'm happy about that. I like that. To just a level of quality that I don't think, and respect as well, that I don't think that we've seen before. And that is on the backs of what those previous players did. And this generation's carrying it forward, and it's easy to get excited about it because, my God, were we in a dark place 4 years ago.
Dark. And I got to add these two things. One, Reggie Cannon throwing out Venezia to Jean-Luc.
Yeah.
DiBusio. And Busio's like, hey, shut up. It ain't done yet. Shut up. And he's like, Venezia. And then two, the Revolution had Matt Turner win Golden Glove, okay, and Tejan Buchanan win Young Player of the Tournament. Both were not with the squad throughout Gold Cup, and the Revolution have won 4 straight without those two players. That's all I'm going to say, okay?
Charlie, would you say that this is actually really a Gold Cup for Syracuse? Tejan Buchanan, Miles Robinson, Kamal Miller.
No, I will
Miller.
Not. No, I will okay. not. Shout out it to Ian like McIntyre. Shout out to Ian McIntyre, though, at Syracuse. You're doing big things.
Oh, thank you, Charlie. Brad Feldman couldn't have said it better himself. All right, we're out of here. That's it for us. We are out of here.
Feldman's my man. Don't mess around with Feldman. You know he's watching right now, too.
Campeones. 7 times the U.S. have won this tournament. Incredible, incredible win. We'll be back on Monday to talk MLS Week 16. Ton of moves, ton of big games, ton of things that you need to know about. We'll see you then. Go check the podcast feed, rate, subscribe, do whatever you got to do. Tell your friends about us. We'll be back time the U.S. play post-game.
Let's go, women's national team.
Yeah, you going to sleep?
I don't know how I'm going to do this.
I'm going to sleep. This is probably going to be on record for me. Anyway, I'm out of here. You guys are out of here. Enjoy your night, everybody, or your day if you're listening on Monday. We'll see you next time.